The Spinoff Podcast Network.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. The Investment Fix Podcast. Tune in today.
When the Facts Change is brought to you by the Spinoff Podcast Network, in partnership with KiwiBank. The bank for Kiwi, looking to get ahead in business and in life. A bank that delivers expertise and banking know-how, smart advice for business owners wanting to invest, grow their business, or diversify. A bank that adapts with technology through the lens of its people and customers. It is a bank with heart that is driven by its purpose. Kiwi, making Kiwi better off. Kia ora, I'm Bernard Hickey. But this is not When the Facts Change. Seeing as you like the first season of This is Kiwi so much, our friends at KiwiBank thought you might enjoy the new season, this time getting into the heads of six extraordinary young New Zealanders. Have a listen while you wait for the next episode of When the Facts Change, and I'll be back on Friday with my regular economics yarns.
Kia ora, I'm Jane Yee, and welcome to This is Kiwi, a podcast series brought to you by KiwiBank and the Spinoff Podcast Network. In this series, I'll meet with incredible New Zealanders who've achieved remarkable things, uncovering what makes them tick and the influences that have helped to shape their ideas. Most importantly, This is Kiwi will bring you knowledge for better, the incredible power of determination, passion, and self-belief that we can all learn from and apply to our own lives every day. So join me on this unique journey as we celebrate the Kiwi spirit and learn what it takes to make a difference. This is Kiwi. Where ordinary people do extraordinary things. My guest today is a world-class athlete. Sarah Hirani has spent nearly a decade as the captain of the Black Ferns Sevens team. She's a member of the New Zealand Order of Merit for services to rugby. She's a gold and silver Olympic medalist and has a couple of Rugby World Cup wins under her belt as well. Now, that is all obviously incredibly impressive. But what I love about the korero I had with Sarah is learning more about her off the pitch. As a world champion captain, Sarah's an impressive leader, but as you'll hear, she never expressly set out to be a leader, and maybe that's why her leadership style is so interesting. Sarah also didn't set out to become a spokesperson for normalising conversations around money. She grew up in a home where that was just the norm, and over the years, she's come to realise that opening up about money means opening up opportunities for a better and more stable future. I found Sarah's humility really striking when she talks about how she works with her team and where she sees herself in that matrix, or her mindset around understanding money. It's easy to forget you're listening to one of the world's best athletes. But make no mistake, Sarah Hirani is determined. She's highly competitive and 100% driven by her passion for rugby. The fact she's been able to turn that passion into a career is truly inspirational, and there's a lot in this korero we can all learn from. Here's Sarah Hirani on This is Kiwi. Kia ora, Sarah. It's so lovely to have you in the studio. I'm so excited to meet with you. How are you?
Kia ora. Thank you so much for having me. And yeah, I can't wait for this korero.
Yeah, well, it's going to be an interesting one because we are going to be talking like a lot about leadership. We're very well placed to speak to. And we're also going to be talking a little bit about money, which I know might seem strange, but actually, when you think about it, you don't need money to be a leader and you don't need to be a leader to make money. But there is kind of a relationship in there that can be really beneficial for people in terms of empowerment and so on. So I'm just setting the scene, but let's start with little Sarah. Tell me a little bit about growing up. You grew up outside of Fielding, is that right?
Yeah. So I grew up on a farm with my parents and my brother and sister, and it was a pretty cool childhood. We were obviously grew up on a farm, so I had to work quite hard as kids and, yeah, learnt the value of money quite early on.
Right. I mean, working pretty hard as a kid doesn't necessarily sound like the coolest of childhoods, but what does it mean to work on a farm as a kid?
Oh, I think at the time it was not that fun. We didn't tend to know what weekends were. We had jobs in the morning before the school bus would come, and obviously in the afternoon my parents worked pretty hard and long hours, so we learned how to cook dinners, do all the chores and things like that. But I think when I look back, it was the freedom that we had as kids. We were allowed to ride motorbikes, ride the horses, and kind of had free rein of the farm. So I just loved it. Went down to the neighbours, hung out with the kids down our road, and yeah, it was a, I think, a pretty cool lifestyle now that I live in town and see what kids probably don't have.
It's classic, just not realizing how good you had it when you had it, right? And how has talking about money quite openly with your whānau when you were young, how do you think that's influenced your financial journey?
Talking about money with my family has given me opportunity to make my own money decisions. It's probably given me better decisions of what opportunities are out there and things that I can put my money into.
And when you're a kid and that's just the way things are in your family, you don't really have an understanding necessarily that, like, other people don't operate that way. Mm. So when you kind of, I guess, moved out into the world a bit more on your own, did you feel comfortable having money conversations with people? Did you kind of like clock that it's much more taboo, I guess, in other families?
Yeah, it wasn't probably until we start talking with friends or when I left high school and went into university, and you'd kind of mention stuff about money and people didn't really want to talk about it, and say we, like, you'd get a job and say what you'd be making and friends probably wouldn't mention what they were making. And I didn't really understand that at the time. I was like, in our household, we just always talked about it. That was just what we did. And then you kind of then get an understanding of their families wouldn't talk to them about it, so why should they talk about it? Mm-hmm. And I get that it's a personal preference whether you do or not, but I was lucky about that. My sister then, when she left high school, became an accountant, so that's the front of her mind. And she was always on mine and my brother's case around what we were spending our money on.
I also have an accountant sister. Is she the oldest by any chance?
Yeah,
same. So I can relate entirely. It's actually quite handy having
it. It is very handy now.
I mean, we got onto the money conversation a lot quicker than I was anticipating. But, you know, I think the really interesting thing to consider here is, yes, people think, you know, there are a lot of people who think it's taboo or maybe feel uncomfortable about talking about money. And you said it's a personal preference thing. And of course, we respect that. But also, there is this empowerment that comes from being able to have these conversations. And it doesn't mean talking about how much you earn or how much is in your bank account, but more kind of your relationship with money. So what would you consider your relationship with money to be?
I think it's a lot better now. I think because of the way that I was brought up, we didn't ask for anything extra. Definitely never got anything brand new. And then so when I started making money myself, because I'd earned it, I'd worked hard for it, I decided that I wanted nice new shiny things and I'd buy the latest iPhone or pretty much anything that I could. And then I had to realize that that doesn't consistently keep happening. I'm not going to make all this money and or be able to have money in my bank account if I'm just going to continually spending it on stuff. And yeah, my sister was probably a big help with that. We ended up buying our first home quite early on because of stuff, the extra jobs that we were doing. And that then gave me the value of actually I can start planning for my future. I can have things but still be able to be really comfortable around certain situations. So yeah, it's definitely, I've now have a relationship, a way better relationship with it. But I think early on it was, yeah, probably more so what can I buy because I've now got money.
So even having had that kind of exposure to those conversations at home when you were young and having the sister who's an accountant and kind of on your case and all that, it doesn't stop that kind of, I've got my first job, I've got my first pay packet, I want to buy an iPhone kind of thing, you know. It's like that's an extremely natural response, I think, and we can all relate to that. You've also been a leader for like your entire adult life, right?
Like, yeah, that's scary to think about.
But that's the truth. And I'm so curious to know if that was like a natural bent you had when you were younger, or if it's something you kind of like that was happened upon you and you learned how to be a leader.
I don't think I ever thought about it as a kid, being a leader, especially when I was at school. Like, I would sometimes get leadership awards, but I think I went to small schools, so there was probably three kids in my age group at times. So, but it wasn't.
Do you think that might have put you in a bit of a leadership mindset though? Like, even if you're like the one of three and you got the leadership award, does it make, do you think there's something in that that kind of goes, you know what, maybe there's something to that?
It might be because of the schools that I went to. We were in classes with a lot of different age groups. My first school, I was five in the same classroom as all the 13-year-olds right. before they went to high school, and then moved on to a bigger school that had three classrooms, but you were still around and having to help out younger kids. But I didn't really think about it too much until I probably got named as leadership roles in sports teams.
And, right.
But it was something that I just wanted to be the best rugby player that I could be, or best hockey player at the time that I could be. So it wasn't too much about wanting to lead. I was like, if I can just try and do what I could, then hopefully that would help the team, in my eyes, win. And I suppose, yeah, other people seen that kind of leadership traits. And then when I became the captain of the Sevens team, it was actually, now I need to focus on being a leader because it's now my job, and I wanted to put everything that I could into it, but wanted to do it right as well.
When thinking about your style of leadership, what is one thing that's really important to you in terms of leadership?
Probably the one thing that I've learned about leadership is being able to listen. And like, I know it comes with the communication style, but understanding who you're listening to, and being able to adapt your leadership style based on who's probably who you are leading.
It's really interesting you say that, because I was just, you know, like, I guess the traditional, you know, my traditional understanding of leadership on a really top line is to think the person who makes the decisions and kind of tells people what to do, you know, the idea of a leader and a follower. But actually, you know, the way you're framing it, and it is, you know, now that I hear it, it's obviously much more, you know, this is what it is. It's that kind of having that understanding of people and that respect of others as well. And really interestingly, you'd point out different, you know, people have different communication styles, mm. which means you have to be really adaptable too, right?
Yeah, communication styles, listening styles, I think that's a big part of it. And, but it's been great. I've got a lot of stuff wrong. And, but I think in our team, we're lucky that people will tell you if you get it wrong. They won't hide from you, or like, they want to help. Yeah. So you kind of go back and forth. I'll get something wrong. Someone else might get something wrong, but it's the being able to communicate effectively to get probably the best outcome that helps a lot.
Mm.
And when I go, I'll keep referring back to the people that I've been able to lead alongside. Like, there's been so many people that have helped me that are different to the way that I lead. And like, I'll listen to how they speak to others, or different personalities that I probably find hard to communicate with. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's how you're going to get the best out of that player, or vice versa, and how we talk to a management team. It's been, yeah, really, really interesting, but a lot of fun. And I'm loving we've got a new leader in our team now, and being able to bounce ideas off with her now that she's younger, probably can communicate better with a lot of our younger girls. And yeah, it's like a continuous journey of learning and growing, and it's fun and very hard at times too.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, it's got to be a lot of pressure, I think, you know, particularly when you're a captain of a team. You know, there's pressure on you to kind of, I guess, you know, on the very basics to get results,
mm.
but also, like you say, you're kind of managing all these different personalities and people. Does it feel a lot? Like, sometimes you're just like, I would rather just be not captain. I just roll into training, do what I'm told, roll out again and not lose sleep.
Yeah, I'd be lying if I said I didn't have some of those thoughts, definitely throughout my career. I probably have enjoyed stepping away from the Sevens environment sometimes and playing 15s or going into other environments where I am just a player. And not that I probably step back from voicing some of my opinions in those teams, but actually being able to just focus on myself and play rugby for why I've probably first started. But yeah, I think that's why I probably try and have really good balance, and I have a really good support network outside of the environment that I can probably offload or deload some of the stuff that I've taken from the team and just want to get off my chest without having it to doing it with some of the other players. And I think it is a little bit lonely at times. It's especially when times are hard, and we've had a couple of seasons where things haven't gone our way, and it's been a bit tough in that sense. But yeah, for the most part, it's pretty rewarding. And yeah, when things are going well, then it's pretty amazing.
In the context of leadership, and I think there's a certain resilience you have to have in your role as a captain, but also I guess, just resilience in life in general. Can you share a piece of advice or maybe a personal mantra that's helped guide you through challenging moments?
Lean on the support network you have. Probably one, finding good support people around you is important. And yeah, there's been a couple of times in my career where I've really had to lean on the people that I've had around me and probably tell them what you're looking for as well. I think that's been an important part, whether you want their feedback or whether you want them just to listen.
That is such good advice, right?
Very, very different like places, and probably if you don't share that, then you might be disappointed with the conversation you have. But yeah, lean on those, that support network. That's been the biggest part of being a part of a team situation. I needed people outside of our team to be able to rely on, especially when things are quite hard and like our team stuff hasn't always been easy, and there's definitely days where you go home and you're like, I just want to tear your hair out. But I think that's, yeah, then when the days are amazing, it's absolutely amazing.
Let's talk a little bit about, we've talked money, we've talked a little bit about leadership, and we've talked about your team. And how do those two worlds kind of collide, I guess, in your career? Do you talk money with the other, with your teammates?
Yeah, I do with quite a lot of them. A couple of my best friends are in the team, so we bounce ideas back and forth quite a bit around sometimes what we're spending our money on, or what we're trying to put our savings into, or investments, or the houses we might be trying to look at buying. But when I say houses, I say house, sorry. But then now it's been a pretty cool journey with the younger girls and them having different contract negotiations. They ask, quite a few of us, what I'm on, and I come openly talk about it, because for me it's not about hiding what I'm on, and not just in the Sevens side. I'm trying to encourage them that you can actually make money outside of the Sevens environment, which is like absolutely amazing. There's so many cool opportunities out there for girls. And yeah, that's probably what the messages a couple of us are trying to share. Like you can do other stuff, you can be a Sevens player, you can make good decisions, and then probably for me, trying to share my mistakes that I've made with my money, and sometimes trying to push them in a different direction.
It's sharing your wisdom, Sarah, is what it is. It's sharing your wisdom. I think that's a really interesting part of this leadership conversation, because it's probably not something a lot of people would think about in terms of sport. It's like, you know, as a captain talking to their teammates about money and being really like transparent about what you can pay and so on. But actually pay, obviously, in sport, especially when it comes to women's sport, is a really big deal. Your first contract you signed as a professional sportswoman was, what, $30,000 to you? A lot of money at the time.
Yeah.
But what were your male counterparts getting paid? That's what I'm curious to know.
Yeah, a lot more than $30,000, that's for sure. Yeah.
How long did it take for you to realize that, okay, it's a privilege to be doing what I'm doing, and it's lovely that I'm getting paid, but how come he's getting a lot more than I am for the same job?
I think that's always going to be a struggle for me. Like, I know how grateful I am to be doing something that I love, to be getting now paid pretty good money for it. So it is a struggle when you kind of have to compare things like that. And I do know genuinely at the time that what the boys were getting is absolutely amazing for them. And I didn't want to compare that, because they'd won, I think, 10 World Series titles at that time. We had just started becoming a professional environment. So, we're lucky now. We're on equal playing fields. We get equal insurances, saving schemes, like everything like that is the same for this both Sevens programs. So I'm just glad that I was a part of the journey starting from scratch to where it is now. And I just really hope that, or encourage these younger girls to keep pushing the boundaries and things like that. And yeah, I hope that both teams go up together.
What motivates you to keep pushing the boundaries and, you know, break the glass ceiling? Because you got a lot on as it is. You sort of told me what your like your schedule is for today, and that seems a lot, and you know, involves flying around the place and going to different events and then coming in here and talking to us. There's a lot on, and that's not even training and games and tournaments. What makes you keep pushing?
I probably half of it see the players or people who have set us up for what we have now, and like I'm around a lot of those, the wahine that set us at the foundations of when they didn't get anything, they worked extremely hard for it. They were happy with getting potentially a playing jersey. But so I see that and I'm like, I'm motivated to keep pushing what they set us up for. But I also see my niece, my nephew, yeah, who are 5 and 3. And to be honest, my niece doesn't like rugby. She knows that we play. She loves wearing her Black Ferns training shorts. But like I see her and I'm like, if she can see us and see her other aunties playing something and just pushing the boundaries of, like now for her, she sees, well, my nephew knows probably more woman rugby players than he does male rugby players. It's just the norm for them.
Yeah, love to hear it.
Like, I see that and I'm like, I want to keep pushing the boundaries. We've got players in our team who have kids and their kids' mindset is exactly the same. We're just rugby players to them. We're not women rugby players. So, yeah, I can want to continue doing that, and hopefully one day I'll have kids that want the same thing.
And so much of it is that just kind of that role modelling, right? Like when you talked about being at school with kids of different ages, you were being shown leadership in the classroom every single day by some of those 12 and 13-year-olds, right? Some of it probably wasn't always great, but, you know, I have an almost 12-year-old, so I can kind of like, it freaks me out to think of him in any sort of a leadership role. But I'm always wondering when it comes to leadership, if it is something that can be learnt. What do you think?
I think people definitely have leadership tendencies. Some people probably won't show theirs until they're in an environment that they feel most comfortable in. But you can definitely learn a lot about leadership, and you can do it by reading, listening to podcasts, but I think the experiences that you get and the people you are around will help grow you as a leader more than anything.
Mm. And tell me a little bit about your Te Ao Māori journey, because I've read some interviews where you've talked a little bit about your Te Ao Māori journey and that perhaps there was some imposter syndrome or some, you know, just some nervousness around exploring that side of your culture and what it means. So tell me a little bit about that.
I 100% think that's still there. That's probably something I'll have for, I don't know how long, but I'm okay with that at the moment. And I think I'm lucky that I'm around such staunch wahine who push us in a team sense, and they want us to be able to be strong. And when we do our haka, our waiata, and so I'm lucky that I get to learn Māori in my team environment. I'm learning Māori at work, which is absolutely amazing. And like people ask what type of degree I have. I have a Māori studies degree. And then they ask if I can speak the language. And I say, no, I actually can't. I did papers in te reo, but I can't speak te reo Māori. But I know that it's okay at the moment. When the time is right, it will happen. My niece now is learning Te Ao Māori, and she's teaching me a lot around where we come from, who we are, and yeah, that's been a pretty cool journey to be able to learn alongside her as well.
You can't be what you can't see. Is that something that you've said?
Yeah, but I've definitely heard it, so I'm not claiming
you're not
that
claiming
quote.
It. Okay, but it can be one of your mantras, sure. What does that mean?
For me, it means having exposure, showing the world like I'm a part of a team that didn't have a lot of exposure. I'm going to say 5-6 years ago, we were posting on our Instagram pages, on our Facebook pages, how to watch us play, and it was download a VPN.
Yeah, right.
Which was probably illegal, but sign up to some link to be able to watch it at 2:35 in the morning. And I remember getting a message from my grandma just being so upset that she couldn't watch me play.
You can't explain how to do a VPN to grandma.
Like, she's finally got Facebook or whatever, but back then it was, he was just like, oh, but I just want to watch it on Sky. Why can I not watch it? And now that all our games are broadcast live, everyone's got an opportunity to watch them on YouTube, everything, it's so amazing. And you can see a difference, the amount of people in the street that know the Sevens, the 15s teams. Obviously the World Cup last year here playing in home soil has changed women's rugby, I think, forever now. And I just want every player, whether they play rugby or not, or any sports player in New Zealand, to be able to be well known by the public. I think that's really important for people's growth, for the sport's growth. And yeah, I think even next year when we play on the big stage, it's going to be pretty amazing.
How's that all shaping up, by the way?
Yeah, it's going pretty good.
Good.
Yeah.
Glad to hear it.
Bit sore from training yesterday, but
it's the job you chose.
True.
You were in Japan last year and you played with the Pearls. What was your role in like the team there, like going from leading back home? What was your role when you went to Japan?
I just went there as a player. I went there to play some footy, experience a different culture and eat some amazing Japanese food. So I was so happy to go and just be myself that wasn't a captain, that wasn't a leader. And yeah, it was absolutely amazing. I got to hang out with some amazing, amazing rugby players who didn't speak any English, who couldn't understand English, and we had to figure out a way of becoming friends, understanding each other's training styles, and then having to play alongside these girls. And it was difficult, but the best experience I think I've probably ever had, and has probably changed some of the communication style that I'll have when I play with this New Zealand girls back when I'm now back in New Zealand.
Oh, that's interesting. In what ways do you think? Like what did you learn from their communication style?
Probably over-communicating or being really purposeful in what you say. Like I couldn't say, like in one of the moves, cut me, cut me. Like they're looking at me like, I'm going to say speaking a different language, but I was
yes,
to them.
Yeah.
And I had to learn what they knew too. So we'd like go out for coffee. What do you know in English? What don't you know? What are the Japanese words for these certain moves that I needed to know in our plays? And so like I'd say some of the Japanese words, and how respectful it was to be able to learn some of the Japanese words for them. And you'd be at training and you'd learn some of the words, you'd say it and they'd look at you like, oh my gosh, you've learnt some of our language. And for me, that was really important and quite powerful. And I turned up a bit late in the season because of the World Series stuff. And they, having that respect for them, I think, was really important for me. And I, made some pretty cool friends because of it.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, Japan's just an incredible, incredible country. And they are so respectful, hey, and so humble. It must have been quite a different playing environment. Not saying that we're not respectful and humble here, but just, yeah, those cultural differences. And it must be just like really full on trying to do that when you're not speaking the same language.
They're on a different level, I think. Their respect is, it's very hierarchy-based, which was interesting, but quite fun to like almost slip into the way that they were, just wanted to immerse ourselves fully. But I think the way that we gave them respect, then they would take us out for dinner and take us to their favourite spots, order us food or book us a table. I think that was for me a part of, trying to, I suppose, trying to be a Japanese person without having to be a Japanese person.
When you're in that quite hierarchical environment, did you see, the leadership must have been quite different then. What style of leadership did they have?
Yeah, it was too. And I was obviously being a part of a team that was owned as well. Like obviously
right.
I've only been a part of the provincial, or everything's run through New Zealand Rugby, which is amazing too. But over there it's based on like a person owns the club and
right. That's
the person. And everyone's just extremely respectful to them, which I quite enjoyed, because someone owns a women's sevens team. To me, that's what I seen.
Yeah, right.
I was like, wow, like I want to own a sevens team.
Hey, one day.
Hopefully. Oh, we've got a club team, but we're definitely not professional. But that's how I seen it. And I just was so, like, I would try and ask him so many questions, like, why women's sevens? And, like, his daughters never played. The GM was the same. Why would you put so much time into this? And they just said, because they love rugby. And they wanted the women's side of rugby to grow. They wanted to try and make it as equal to men. And just hearing that, I was like, I knew that I'd pick the right team because of that.
That's amazing. That's so cool. I love that. I love it. Becoming a professional athlete, which you did fairly young, you also, I mean, I just want to point out, you've talked about buying a house. You did that at 19.
Yeah.
Became a professional athlete at?
20 maybe.
Okay. Yeah. That's quite a healthy CV there. But it's a significant milestone. What has being a professional athlete meant for you and your family financially?
For me and my husband, it's been pretty amazing. We've been able to buy a house in Tauranga area, which I know is extremely difficult to do. And it's also just given me so many more opportunities off the field to be able to meet some amazing people. And like, I've been in rooms where like I pinch myself and that sent me to the Rugby World Cup in Paris not long ago, and it's been able to show me that that rugby can take you around the world, but it can also open up doors for my future. It's given me the most amazing lessons about money, maybe where to steer towards and not other places. And yeah, I'm still constantly learning that, but I've got really great people around me to help with those things as well.
I'm going to ask you kind of like a fun money question. What is the most indulgent thing you've purchased?
Thinking about that, but probably a car.
A nice car?
Yeah, nice car. I didn't even have it for that long, but I think the fact that I had the money to just go out and buy it, that was...
That's trippy, right?
Yeah.
That new car smell. Yeah. You get your 3 years of servicing, you don't have to worry about it.
And I remember being so proud of it at the time. Now I probably advise some of the young girls not to do that. It's
wisdom. That's the wisdom.
Yeah, but I'm glad that I did.
Yeah.
To be able to learn that.
Like, do you have something you won't skimp on? Because for me, it's bed sheets. Like, I'm happy. I'm literally wearing my 16-year-old niece's hand-me-down shoes. I'm quite happy to buy all my clothes secondhand. But bed sheets, I want nice bed linen.
It's probably a good thing I don't have to pay for my clothes. what do I not skimp on? I'm probably food.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You're a foodie?
Yeah, yeah. I'm lucky I can kind of say, oh, I need food to be able to perform.
Oh, so you can do a tip of a tax right off the
end. I'm like, I just love food. Yeah. Anything food is great.
Good to know. And what about the sort of the most sensible financial decision you've made?
Probably buying a house.
Yeah.
Yeah. And co-owning it with my sister when I was 19.
So talk me through co-own.
It was
the top line.
Like, my parents always told us that was what we had to do. We had to try and buy a house, and they gave us the opportunity. I worked in summer holidays, so I shore sheep during something which made me quite good money. My sister would wool handle. We put a deposit on a house in Palmerston North, and I just had to figure out a way of paying off the mortgage when I was a full-time student. And yeah, that was... I'm so grateful for that. I don't know how we did it at times, but now I look back on it, I'm like, I was 19 and had a house.
That is so, okay.
It's
that
crazy.
Is so wild. That is so wild. It's pretty cool.
It's, yeah, and then that set me up to sell that, buy a place with my husband now in Tauranga, and yeah, it's...
Did you live in the house or was it, you did?
Yeah, so I was lucky we lived in it. We had... I think we counted up over the years that I was living there, like 24 different flatmates. It would be like the halfway house for people at uni or people coming to stay and things like that. But yeah, it was a pretty cool experience now. And So, yeah, it's nuts.
Yeah, oh, well done. There's a very difficult thing to do these days, but certainly you also don't have to be looking in Auckland central suburbs to buy your first home, you know. Yeah.
I'm like, it around. Was like 200,000, which is crazy to think of this now.
I wouldn't get you a lot today. We discussed a little bit the idea about money isn't scary if you understand it. So do you have anything you'd say to someone who's just like, oh, it's too, I don't get it, it's too much, I can't.
I don't think money has to be scary if you talk about it often enough. I think the things we find the most scariest is when we just refuse to blank talk about it. But have those people you're comfortable with, vibe off each other, share experiences, and I think share mistakes, and it becomes less and less scary.
We've talked about challenging times. I know you've talked about a really buoyant, happy team environment, but, you know, there's no escaping the fact that there are challenging times as well. What drives you to keep going when those challenging times are really, really hard?
Yeah, there's going to be times where it's pretty challenging, times are tough, but for me, I just love playing rugby. That's why I started playing and why I wanted to do what I do. And I know that I can wake up and think about that, and it gives me the drive to want to continue to train hard, to be a good leader, to want our team to be successful, because I know I'm doing something that I love every single day.
And it's a privilege to be able to turn your passion into a career, right? Like, that's a really cool thing, but you've shown it can be done.
It's, yeah, I'm very, very lucky, but I love what I do, and it's something that I've always wanted to, and I, yeah, probably told my parents I would when they told me probably wasn't going to be possible.
You're also quite good at it, by the way. I just put that out there. That helps.
Too competitive, that's why.
We'll just finish on this. If you can recommend one thing that Kiwi could do this week to start either doing or thinking about in order to achieve their goals, what would that one thing be?
My one advice that I would give is go and buy a book. Whatever area you want that book to be in, if it's your passion, if it's something you want to do, go and buy a book. And when you're finished with it, give it to someone else to read.
Very good and very easily applicable advice. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I totally agree with you and don't do it enough and will. But it's creating habits too. Yeah. Hey, thank you so much for joining with us today. And I feel like I've learned a lot from you. I have. You've led in this room, which has been really nice. This is Leadership. This is Sarah Hirani. This is Kiwi.
When the Facts Change was brought to you by the Spin-Off Podcast Network, together with KiwiBank. Visit kiwibank.co.nz to find out how KiwiBank are making Kiwi better off.
Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today. The Spin-Off Podcast Network.